We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We're holding the third line of the wide line. There's eight lines from the bottom. Continuing on the halachas of what kind of doors need mezuzahs. The Gemara says, Amar Rapapa Sava Mishmei Derav. Rapapa the elder, this is not the regular Rapapa in Shas. The regular Rapapa in Shas is a Talmud of Rava, so he's many generations after Rav. To put it in terms of the generations of Amoraim, Rav is the first generation, Rapapa, regular Rapapa, and Shas is the fifth. So they lived a long time apart. So this is Rapapa the elder. Said in the name of Rav, Beis Shar HaPasuach L'Chatzor. Now we learned before, but we learned yesterday about a Beis Shar, a gatehouse, like basically like one of those booths that a security guard sits in. So here you have a Beis Shar that is open to, sorry, I skipped the line. Omar Rachva, sorry, starting from the third line. Omar Rachva, Omar of Yehuda, Behav Ziki Chayev B'Shtei Mezuzahs. A Behav Ziki is Chayev in two mezuzahs, one on each of its doors. So Gemara says, my Behav Ziki. What is a Behav Ziki? Omar Papa Sava, Meshmei Derav, Beis Shar, HaPasuach L'Chotzer, Obatim Psuch on the Beis Shar. It means when you have a gatehouse like that, and you have, it's open to the Chotzer, and then you have, there are doors open, and then there are houses, then the houses are open directly into the Beis Shar. So in other words, you have the Beis Shar, is a little house attached to the house, or not necessarily attached, but you have a door between them, and then you have a door out to the, and then you have a door out to the chotzer from there. So therefore, each of those two doors is going to need a mezuzah because each one of them is considered to be a door. Is considered to be a door of the house. If the gatehouse itself had only one, if the gatehouse itself, if you went directly normally a Beis Shar is just in front of the chotzer. So then you just need a mezuzah when you're going into the chotzer. But here, where you also have that you can go from it into the house, then you need a second mezuzah over there. So the Gemara continues in this vein, Tana Rabbanan, Beis Shar HaPasuach L'Gino U'L'Kitonis. If you have a Beis Shar like that, where one side is open to the garden and the other side is open to a Kitonis, to a small room in the house, Rabbi Yossi and Nidin Kitonis. So the Rabbi Yossi says that such a Beis Shar would be considered like the Kitonis, like the little room in the house itself, v'chayev and mezuzah, and therefore it would be chayev in a mezuzah because it's sort of mezuzah. Rashi says, yeah, we need a mezuzah because it's considered like the Kitonis. V'cham say it's considered like the Beis Shar. It's just considered like outside space, like a garden, and a garden doesn't need a mezuzah. So therefore, according to that, the Beis Shar wouldn't either. So the Gemara points out, on the side of it here, in fact, it says the Shittim Kubretzis instead has the Girsa, not Nidin Kabes Shah, but Nidin Ka'aver. It's considered like the open air space, and that doesn't require a mezuzah. So the Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel Dami Tavayu, so Rav and Shmuel both explain the Machlokas as follows. Migina Labayis, if you're talking about just an entrance from the garden into the house, we've learned about the concept of heker tzir. When you have a door that swings open and you have two areas that are equally important, then which side do you put the mezuzah on? We said you put it on the right side of the side that the door swings into. You go according to where the hinges are. So now, if you have like this, if the door goes from the garden into the house, And the heker tzir, the direction the door swings into is into the house. Kol ha'amol pligi d'chayev, then everybody will agree, Rabbi Yosi and the Chachamim, that it requires a mezuzah. My time would be a debayisi, because then there's no question, it's a door into the house. So it doesn't matter the fact that it's coming out from the garden, no more so than it would matter, let's say, a door that comes out of the street. Ki pligi mibayis legina. The machlokas says when you're going from a house into the when the door swings from the house into the garden. Marisava kitonis iker. So Rabbi Yossi holds, well, since the door swings outward into the garden, then that means the garden is considered the more important thing. So the Chachamim hold that the Kitonis, the house, is still considered the more main thing. The door swings away from it. Doesn't matter. It's still considered a door of the house. When would we say Heker Tzir is only when you have a door between two buildings or two rooms where both of them are primary. Here, the main thing is the Kitonis. The door is mainly made for the Kitonis. And therefore, the Chachamim say that's reason to require a mezuzah for it. Whereas Rabbi Yossi holds that the garden is considered the main thing, and you see even that the door swings outward into it, and therefore that would be a reason to say that it's potter, because after all, a gate into a garden doesn't require a mezuzah. So that's Rab and Shmuel explain the machlokas that way. Rabba for Rab Yosef, Dami Tavayo, on the other hand, Rabba and Rab Yosef explain the other way around. Midbayis Legina, if the door swings outward into the garden, the Kolamalek Figi, the Potter, then everybody would agree that's Potter. There's no question that it's considered a doorway into the garden, and a garden would be Potter for Mezuzah. My time, why would it be Potter? My time, a Piska Degina, who, because it is an opening into the garden. Kiplig Megina Labayis, Machlokas would be when it's from the, when the door swings from the garden into the house, Marsova Bia Debayis, who, well, on the Chachamim hold, this is considered an entrance into the house. Therefore, it's Chayiv and Mezuzah. Oh, Mar Sava, where's Rabbi Yossi hold? So Rabbi Yossi will hold that it's considered. So therefore, so Rabbi Yossi is going to say that it's considered like Tonus, and therefore it's Chayiv and Mezuzah. Oh, Mar Sava, where's the Chacham hold? Kula Adaita Degina Hu Davida. The whole thing was made only for the sake of the garden. So even Heker Tzir or not, the fact is it's considered a door of the garden, and therefore you, and therefore it would be Potter from Mezuzah. Okay. So we have two different sets of Amiroyim arguing what the correct meaning of the Machlokas is. Is there a case where the door is always going to be Chayiv and a Mezuzah according to everybody? Is there a case where it's always going to be Potter? And what is the exact case where Rabbi Yossi and the Chacham are arguing? So the Gemara says, Abaya v'Rava, Avdi k'Rabba v'Rabbi Yosef. Abaya and Rava acted in practice according to Rabba and Rabbi Yosef's explanation. Meaning, if we say the halacha is like if we say that the halacha is like the chachamim, and usually it would be against usually it would be like that against Rabbi Yossi, so then you would say, in other words, that where it swings out into the garden, then it would be Potter, and when it swings into the and when it swings, so therefore it would come out according to the chachamim. Either way, it would be Potter, and if we follow Rabbi Yossi, then it would be chayiv only if it swings into the house. So Abaya and Rava held that way. But Rav Ashi over to Rav Shmuel the chumra. However, Rav Ashi held like Rav and Shmuel to be machmir. If it swings into the house, then it's definitely chayiv, and if it swings into the garden, then you would have to follow Rabbi Yossi. The hilchsa Rav Shmuel the chumra, and in fact the halacha is like Rav and Shmuel the chumra in that way. Namely, in other words, that you would have to have a mezuzah. You would have to have a mezuzah in that case, because we would hold like Rabbi Yossi. Okay. Itmar. Now we have another discussion. Lul pasuach min abayis la'aliyah. Suppose you have a hatchway open from a house, from the ground floor of a house to the upper floor. So Rashi describes there would be a hole in the middle of the floor of the upper floor. There would be a stairwell going from the house up to that. Then you would have, kind of like nowadays in stairwells and apartment buildings and things like that, you would have walls around the stairway. You don't want, for example, imagine you have it's two different people living in the two different apartments. You don't want, for example, that people from the upstairs apartment are just going to be able to barge into the downstairs one anytime. So therefore, they would put walls around it with a doorway so that you can't come in there without permission. Like you think of like, for example, the stairwell in office buildings and hotels and things like that, you have they're often going to have like that. So now the question is, which of those doorways require a mezuzah? Rishonim talk about that we have to be talking about. Where the upper floor has its own exit to go outside. If they have to go in and out, dafka through the downstairs floor, then there's no question that's going to be chayiv in a mezuzah, because they have to have a mezuzah someplace coming in there. So now we're talking about, though, the upstairs floor, the upstairs apartment does have its own entrance and exit, but it also has this thing to go downstairs. So how many mezuzahs do we need? So if the thing has only one doorway, meaning, in other words, you could have, not necessarily are both of them going to be putting walls and a door around there, around the stairs. Let's say, for example, the upstairs person might say, nobody from downstairs is ever coming up to me, and therefore I don't need a door over there. So if it has only one door, then our opponent says, chayiv mezuzachas, then that stairwell is going to require one mezuzah. And if it has two doors, one on each floor, chayiv b'shtei mezuzahs, then it's going to be chayiv and two mezuzahs. So Rav Papa says, Shma Minah Midi Rav Huna, we can derive then from what Rav Huna is saying in this connection, Hai in Deruna to Israel Bo Bovi, we see then that if you have a room that has four doors, Chai Ba'arba Mezuzas, then it's going to require four mezuzas, one for each door. In other words, in a similar vein, as you're saying over here, that stairwell may require two mezuzas. So the Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Yeah, why shouldn't every door require a mezuzah? And the answer is, the answer is, even though he's used to only using one of those doors, and we did learn before, on Daf Lamed Gimel, that Holachacha HaRogel, we said you go according to the more commonly used door, but here we don't do that. Why is that? Rashi gives two explanations. One is, before we were talking about the two doors. So if you have two doors, and one of them is regularly used much more than the other, as we had, for example, the doors of Rebbe's Beis Medrash, we said the main door that everybody would go in and out is Chayiv and a Mezuzah, but we said there was a door over there that Rebbe would use privately to go from his house into the Beis Medrash, so he can go directly to his seat. So then that kind of thing would be potter because it's bottle to the other one. But Rashi says, here you have four doors, even if one of them is the one most commonly used, but the other three doors aren't going to be bottle to one. So therefore all of them are going to be chayiv. Rashi gives another explanation from the Tshuvas HaGaonim that, what it means is, in other words, that, so Rebbe's door was made again only for him. But for example, we also learned previously that Rav Huna had a similar door in his Beis Medrash, but it wasn't just reserved for him. Other people would use it as well. So now, when you have a bunch of doors into a house and all of them are available for everybody in the house to use, so even though in practice, now you have, let's say, for example, so you used to have, Rashi describes, you used to, let's say, have a lot of people in the house, and therefore they needed many doors into the room. Now, let's say, there are fewer people over there. You don't use as many of the doors. Nevertheless, they'd all be chayiv in a mezuzah, because they're not going to be bottled. But if you had to begin with, a bunch of them were made and some of them are not meant to be used for general use, only for occasional use, then that one would not be necessarily chayav in a mezuzah. The Shonim talk about the details of how exactly does how the Shittim Kubetzis points out. I mean, how exactly is your papa deriving his din from Rav Huna's din? Rav Huna's din is talking about a stairwell, and you have it's used in both directions. And here, your papa is talking about a room that has many different doors. So how is it exactly the same thing? So he brings that Rav Huna can be talking about also that not even necessarily the stairwell has one door upstairs and one downstairs. We can be talking about where the stairwell itself has two doors and one of them is used more often than the other. In all of that, there's more discussion about that. Rav Moshe, for example, has a tshuva where he mentions that when would you say that a door might be potter from a mezuzah because it's used less often, would be, let's say, you have two doors from the same room into the same other room, and both of them serve the same purpose. And just to have one of them is used more regularly and the other one is rarely used. But even then, as Rashi is saying, if it used to be that all of them were used and now less so, then maybe they'd still both be chayav. But if, let's say, for example, you have each door serves a different purpose, one of them goes into one room, one of them goes into a different room, there's no question they're all chayiv in a mezuzah. The Gemara goes on, Omar HaMeimer, Hai Pischa Da'akarna, when you have a door in the corner, and we'll talk about in a second what the case is, what the case is exactly. Chayiv in mezuzah, so such a door is chayiv in mezuzah. Now, let's start by explaining what we mean by that. Rashi explains that it literally means is in the corner. In other words, you have two walls, let's say the north and the east wall, are each cut away a few feet from the end of the wall, and you have a doorway over there. So now you have the two doorposts are not opposite one another because they're at 90 degree angles to one another. The lintel is also on a diagonal. Nevertheless, says HaMeimer, it would still be chayiv in mezuzah. Rav Ashi asked that Meimah, why should it be chayiv? It doesn't have doorposts. Omalei, so Meimah says, of course it does. Adi patzimi. These are the doorposts. The ends of the walls themselves are considered, the doorposts, and therefore it's chayiv in a mezuzah. This is how Rashi explains the scenario. The Rosh has a different explanation that it means that the door is, the Rosh has an explanation which goes together with the next piece of Gemara that we're talking about over here, that the door is, that they're we're similar to what we learned yesterday about an achsadra. We said you have a room that's closed on three sides and open on the fourth. So here, in a similar way, you would have one part of that fourth side is closed, and then you have the one side of the door is the end of that wall, that half a wall that covers that side, and the other doorpost is the actual, just the end of the wall that comes. So let's say, for example, you have, let's say, in the Rosh's scenario, let's say, you would have the eastern side of the room, let's say, is half open. You have a wall that covers half of the east side, and then the end of that is one doorpost, and the other side would be, let's say, the north wall next to that just goes straight and ends there. Amemah would be saying that it's chayev and mezuzah because those things themselves, the end of the wall that comes from the north, as well as the end of the wall that's coming, that's half enclosing the east, both of those make up the doorposts of the door, and therefore it's going to be chayev and mezuzah. So the Gemara continues. Rav Papa ikra l'bei Mar Shmuel. Rav Papa one time visited the house of Mar Shmuel. Now, Mar Shmuel is not Shmuel the Amorah of the Pashtus, because again, Rav Papa was several generations after him. It would be a different Amorah. Chozahu piskot lehavalei el ptsim echad mismala. He saw that there was a doorway there that had only one doorpost on the left side. So that would be similar to the Rosh's scenario that we just talked about over here, where, for example, you have there's one side doesn't have an actual doorpost, just the end or the side of the wall there. Commonly you have that nowadays also. Many times you'll have doorways where one side has a doorpost and the other side is just the wall continues over there. And yet this doorway had a mezuzah. Omale, so the Papa says, come on, which opinion are you following in saying that such a doorway should need a mezuzah? Could a mayor, are you holding like a mayor, as the Gemara is going to explain in a moment, that a mayor would require a mezuzah even when there's only one doorpost? But says Rav Papa, Eimer de Omer of Meir, you know, you can say that a Meir is talking about miyomin when that one doorpost that's there is on the right side. So then you can say that the mezuzah goes there. Mismoil miyomar, but did the Meir say such a thing when that one is on the left side? So in our scenario before, let's say for example, so again you have a wall along the north side, and the end of that wall, the other way around actually. So let's say, for example, the wall that we're talking about is on the south side, and then the opening is on the east. So it comes out that the right side, there's no actual mezuzah there, you just have the wall continues on over there. So even a mayor wouldn't require a mezuzah over there. So the Gemara says, what is the mayor's opinion on the subject that's relevant to this? So like this, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says Beis Secha, the Pasuk says that you have to put the mezuzah on Beis Secha, on your house. So that means Beoscha, that means the way that you come in. Min HaYamin, the right side, because when a person starts walking, most people, the same way as most people are right-handed, most people are right-footed. So they usually start walking with their right foot first, and therefore, you come into the house that way. The Levush gives an explanation that after all, since the Pasuk says of Risharecha, that your gates require a mezuzah, and in fact, the Gemara in Yuma, I've mentioned before that there's a sugya in Masechta Yuma that also talks about many dinim of mezuzah, and the Gemara explains there that even gates of countries require a mezuzah. Rashi gives an interesting example over there. Rashi says the country of Hungary. Hungary is basically a flat plain, and it's surrounded by mountains, and you have in a few places in the mountains there are passes. So back in the day, they would actually have, so literally the country was fairly well defended. All you needed is in those gaps, in those mountains, passes, you would need gates over there. So Rashi explains, let's say, for example, Hungary was a Jewish country, then it would require mezuzahs on those gates of the country. Anyway, once you have that you need mezuzahs even on gates of a country, of course, how much more so you need them on the house. Therefore, the Gemara Kandarshan, that the word beis secha means beoscha, means the way you come. So therefore, it means the right side. That means from the right side. So the Braisa says, after Omer Min HaYomin, you're saying it means from the right side in Elam Ismail. Maybe not. How do you know? Maybe it means it could be also on the left side. After all, Beisecha just means coming in. Maybe it doesn't make a difference right or left. Talmud Lema Beisecha. Therefore, that is why the Pasuk is saying Beisecha. So Gemara says, my Talmud. Yeah, but that you're just repeating the point. How does the word Beisecha come to mean the right specifically? So that's the thing. Omar Rabba, Derech Biyoscha. Rabba says it means the way that you come, the way that a person normally walks. Diki oka inish kare dimina oka. When a person starts moving, usually he moves his right foot first. We talked about yesterday what happens if a person is left-footed. Nevertheless, though, the Mordechai explains, and the later post can bring it, the difference is sometimes you would say, for example, next we're going to be learning about tefillin, and eventually we're going to learn that a left-handed person puts tefillin on his right arm. But the difference is tefillin are a personal thing. Every person puts on their own tefillin. The mezuzah is meant for the entire household. Even if you happen to be left-footed, the rest of the members of the household don't. The people who visit the house are not necessarily. So therefore, you would still put the mezuzah on the right side, even if you personally happen to be left-footed. Okay. So therefore, that's how we learn from the word besecha that it means your right foot first, and therefore that the mezuzah goes on the right side. So far we haven't yet gotten to the mayor's opinion, but first we have to establish the basic concept that the mezuzah has to be on the right side, and then we'll get to the mayor's opinion. So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel ba'acha kameidir apapa, mishmeidir rava ba'ula omar, Rav Shmuel ba'acha explained in the name of Rava, in front of Rapapa, he explained, here's a different way of explaining, me'ocha. We have a different pasuk from which we see that the mezuzah is supposed to be on the right side. We have a pasuk in Melachim, it was actually in today's Haftarah, Parshas Shkolim. The pasuk describes how they're trying to raise money to renovate the Beis HaMikdash in the times of King Yehoyash. So the pasuk, of course, the pasuk describes how they were supposed to be the Kohanim are going to gather money from the Jews all over the kingdom, and then they're going to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash for the repairs, but the Kohanim didn't want to bother. So the pasuk describes, Vayikach Yehoyada HaKohen HaRoin Echad, Yehoyada HaKohen took a box, Vayikach Chorbedalta, and he punched a hole in the door of the box, Vayitin Oseh Eitzel HaMizbeach Miyomin, he placed it on the right side of the next to the Mizbeach, Bevoi Ish Beis Hashem, this way when a person comes into the house of Hashem, V'nos Neshama HaKohenim Shemir HaSachas Kol HaKesav HaMuv Beis Hashem, and the Kohenim who guarded the doors of the Beis Mikdash, the Kohenim who would stand guard by the Beis Mikdash, would place there as Kol HaKesav HaMuv Beis Hashem, all the silver, all the money that was brought to the house of Hashem. And therefore, eventually, over time, people came. They brought their machzor shekel, they brought various other donations to the Beis HaMikdash, and eventually they had plenty of money, and they were able to do the repairs. This is why this is Haftarah, Parshas Shkolim, because it has to do with bringing machzor shekel. Anyway, the point is, it actually explains, a person would come into the eastern gate of the Azara, Shal Nikaner, and then he would see that Orein to his right side. Now, if you're facing towards the west, then your right is going to be towards the north. So we see, and the pasuk is calling it miyamin on the right, bevoi ish, when a person comes. So we see that the right way, the right side, is considered to be the way of coming in. So that's another way of showing that the word beischa, which we're doubting to mean biyoscha, you're coming, means that it should be on the right side. Okay. So now that we established that, now my Reb Meir, so what is your mayor's opinion? What's your mayor's opinion that's relevant to this, which Rav Papa had pointed out before to Mar Shmuel, that you don't have a doorpost on the right, and therefore you shouldn't need a mezuzah over here. So what is it? Detanya, we learn in a brisa. Bayis she'en le'ela p'tzim echad, if a house has only one doorpost, Rav Meir machayev a mezuzah, Rav Meir says it's so chayev a mezuzah, v'cham potter n'cham seitz potter. My time of the Rabbanon, why did the Rabbanon say that it needs two doorposts? Because mizuz zois chsiv, because they say, after all, the pasuk says, chosatam mizuz zois pesecha, you're on your doorposts. So fine, it doesn't mean that you put a mezuzah on each doorpost, but it does mean at least that it needs two doorposts. Okay. My time did a mayor. What about Reb Meir? What about Reb Meir? Why does he hold differently? The Tanya, he says, because we learn in a brisa. When the pasuk says mezuzos, shemei ani miut mezuzos shnayim, you would think that means that you need to have two mezuzos, two doorposts. But true, only mezuzos a parashia. But then in the second section of Shema, it also says the word mezuzos in both parashias in Shema and in Vehoyim Shemaya. In both of them, it says chasavtem al mezuzos besecha or bisharacha. So in both places it says mezuzos, and it also is in the plural. She'en tamud loymer. Now the pasuk didn't need to repeat it. Havi ribui acha ribui. So this is considered it's adding something on top of adding something, and we have a rule. Vein ribui acha ribui elo lamai. When we have twice, the Torah says to add something, then it really means to take away. It's almost like the second one cancels out the first. Miyateh kosim lemezuzah achas. Therefore, the Torah reduces it and says that it needs to be only one doorpost. So therefore, so even if you only have one doorpost, then it's chayiv in mezuzah. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, that's how Rabbi Shmuel learns. Tosfos points out that on the face of it, that would mean The Gemara seems to be implying that the second time it says mezuzahs in V'hoyim Shemaya is written molei with two vavs, so that we can darshan it clearly as meaning mezuzahs, doorposts, and not think that it means mezuzahs, one doorpost. Nevertheless, though, the fact is that Tosfos says it's not really a solid proof, though. Maybe not necessarily does that mean that it's the actual correct spelling. Maybe in fact in both parashiyos it is in fact spelt chaser, and that isn't so. In fact, however, in our Sifrei Torah it is true we do have it that way. We have in the first parasha it's written chaser, so you can be read as if it said mezuzas, but the second time it clearly says mezuzois and it has the extra vav over there. Anyway, that's Rabbi Shmuel learns that way and says that's where we see that you need only one doorpost. Rabbi Akiva Oima Ein Tzorich. Rabbi Akiva says you don't need that. I can darshan it differently. True Oima Ala Mashkes Al Shei Mezuzas. When it comes to the Korban Pesach and Mitzrayim, where it says they had to put the blood on the doorposts and on the lintel and on the two doorposts. Shein Tam Olam Shtei. Now it didn't need to say Shtei because a doorpost. How many doorposts does the door have? It has two. Matam Olam Shtei. What does it say? Shtei Zeb Bona Av. This makes us a Binyan Av. Any place else in the Torah where it says mezuzas, eina ela achas, then it means only one. Actually, yifrit lachakos of shtayim, unless the pasuk specifies two. Well, since it doesn't say v'chasam al shtei mezuzas, therefore it's good enough if it only has one doorpost. So therefore, so that's another way. Says Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel both agree that it needs only one doorpost to be chayev. Whereas the Chachamim say the fact is, it says mezuzos, and both times we read it mezuzos in the plural, and that means that it needs to be two. By the way, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that a mayor learned by both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. First he learned by Rabbi Akiva, he couldn't fully understand him, so he went to Rabbi Shmuel, and after he became an accomplished Talmud Chacham, then he came back to learn by Rabbi Akiva. So here both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva agree that it's both one dual post, and the mayor is following that. The Rishonim argue who was the halacha like between the mayor and the Chachamim. So the Rambam paskens like a Chachamim. If a door does not have two doorposts, then it's potter from a mezuzah altogether. On the other hand, the Rosh and many other Rishonim paskin like the mayor, since after all we see Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva both hold like him. Rabbi Papa is telling Mao Shmuel like his opinion and saying even according to the mayor, it would only be required if the doorpost is on the right, and therefore it would come out the halacha is like that. That is the accepted halacha. So when you have a doorway that has only one doorpost, it is in fact chayev and mezuzah, but provided that doorpost is on the right side and not on the left. So again, if you have, for example, a doorway where you have a wall or a bit of a wall sticking out on the right side, but you have nothing at all sticking out on the left, then it will just go straight through, then it'll be chayiv and mezuzah, but if it's the other way around, it will be potter. Okay. So, to finish off with the dinim of mezuzah, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, uchsavtam, when the pasuk says you should write them, you write them al mezuzah tesecho v'sharecha. Now it sounds like al mezuzah, it sounds like you write it directly on the doorpost. Yochu yichtevena al habanim. So you would think it means that you have to write it actually on the stones of the doorpost itself. In fact, I mentioned yesterday or 2 days ago that the Shemroinim, the Kusim, who still live in the area of Shechem, they actually do that. They literally have. I saw it on our trip to Israel this past summer, where they have on top of their doorways, they have maybe next to the doorways in some places, whatever, they have a stone with certain words of a pasuk engraved on them. So maybe it should mean that, says the Braisa. No, nema kan ksiva, because no, the pasuk says over here uchsavtam, you should write it. The nema lahalan ksiva. Then you have a different pasuk that also refers to writing. We'll explain in a second which pasuk we're talking about. Malahalan ala sefer, afkan ala sefer. Just like over there, it has to be written on a scroll of parchment. The same way here, it has to be written on a scroll of parchment. Rashi says the other writing we're referring to is a get. The pasuk says v'chos ala sefer krisus. A husband should write out a document of divorce for his wife if he wants to divorce her, and that has to be written on a sefer. It's not written on stones, so therefore the same thing over here, it has to be written on parchment. Tosfos asks on that, though. The fact is, get isn't principal kosher if you write it on anything. The Mishnah mentions a Mishnah mentions in Gittin, for example, that you could write a get conceivably on a leaf of an olive tree, or you could write it conceivably on a horn of a cow. So you don't have to write it on a parchment scroll. So rather, Tosfos says, no, we're learning from one of the other writings, either that it says the Kohen has to write out the Parsha Soita, that he erases and that he dissolves the ink into the water to give the Soita to drink, or that a king has to write a Sefer Torah, and by both of those, it has to be on a parchment scroll. Which Tosfos says, in that case, as the Gemara is going to point out in a second, you want to learn from something which is for all time, not, for example, the Gemara is going to point out, we're not going to learn from the writing on the stones in Gilgal, which was a one-time thing. So the same way over here, we want to learn out from something which is absolutely required. A get is not required in the sense that, look, you know, if a man doesn't want to divorce his wife, there's no get to be written, as opposed to a Sefer Torah and a mezuzah and a Sefer Torah are both things that are required for all time. Okay, so therefore, so we learn from that Zera Shava, so therefore it means that you write it on a scroll. But the Braisa says, Oy klocho derech zu, maybe go in a different direction. Instead, Nemakan ksiva v'nemalahalan ksiva. We also find writing in connection with when they cross the Yarden, Hashem tells them in Parshas Kisavoy to take stones and set them up in Gilgal. And write the Torah on them. And it also says the word b'chasavta. Malahalan ala avonim, afkan ala avonim. So maybe just like over there, it has to be on stones. The same way here, it should also be on stones. Well, the Gemara says, fine, but nidol midoima, let's consider which one it's more similar to. Donin ksiva hanehegas adertas, miksiva hanehegas adertas. We're going to learn, rather, something which is applicable for all time from writing which is applicable for all time. So whether we're learning from a get according to Rashi or whether we're learning from Parshas Soita or the King's Sefer Torah according to Tosfos, either way, those are things that are required in future generations as well. As opposed to, you're not going to learn a writing which is for all time, the writing of a mezuzah, from something which is a one-time thing in Jewish history when they came into Eretz Yisrael. And on top of that, the Braisa says, and in fact, we have another passage where we also see that writing is defined as writing on a scroll, and that you also have to write it with black ink. As the pasuk says in Yirmiyah, we quoted this in the Gemara a few days ago in a different context. That Baruch ben Neriah told people who asked him how he wrote Megillas Eicha, Mipiv Yikra Elai Esa Dvarim Ha'Ela, Yirmiyahu dictated the words to me from his mouth, and I'm writing on a scroll, on a parchment scroll with black ink. So we see that a mezuzah also, since it says Uchsavtam, that it has to be written with ink. On parchment, dafka black ink on parchment, and therefore that's it, and that's how it has to be. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rav Acha Brei D'Rava asked Rav Ashi, okay, I hear what you're saying, Gzeira Shava, Rachmona Oma Al Mezuzah. The fact is, the Torah is clearly saying you have to write on the doorposts, which implies on the actual stones of the doorposts. And you're telling me Gzeira Shava? Very nice, Gzeira Shava. The fact is, the Torah seems to be clearly contradicting it by saying Al Mezuzah. So how does that work? The answer is fine, but the pasuk also says uchsav tam, that you should write them, and we learn from that it means siva tama. It has to be a perfect writing. So now, v'hodr al mezuzas. Only then does the Torah say al mezuzas. So in other words, don't write them on the stones itself, then it won't be a perfect writing. Once we establish just now that it has to be written with ink, then you're not going to get clear good writing on stones. So therefore, of necessity, the Torah is telling you it's a two-part process. First, write it on a scroll, and then attach that scroll to the doorpost. So the Gemara says, okay, Well, then once it says chsavtam, then we have no need for the gzeira shava. Then automatically we realize that, yeah, we can't write it directly on the stones of the on the stones or wood or whatever of the doorpost. So why do we even need the gzeira shava? I mean, Gemara answers, Ilav gzeira shava, because if it weren't for the gzeira shava, have amina, you would have thought, lichtiva avna, fine, what you do is you write it on a stone in a way that it will last, you engrave it on a stone, v'likba e'asefa, and then you should attach it to the doorpost, kamash mulan, therefore we need the gzeira shava to tell us that no, it doesn't go on a stone, it goes on a piece of parchment, and then that is attached to the door. So yeah, when it came to the writing on the stones in Gilgal, then the Torah tells us to do it that way, that they should write it on the stones. But ordinarily we don't do. But when it comes to a mezuzah, we don't do that. I did once see somebody once said actually some explanation that actually in a way those stones in Gilgal are almost like symbolically a mezuzah for the whole Eretz Yisrael, but they're not really, because an actual mezuzah includes only the two parashiyos, Shema and Vayom Shemaya, and they wrote the whole Torah on it. Okay. Fine. So now we're done. What?
Simply that stones are not written on, they're engraved.
No, well, the ones in Gilgal, Bepashtus, they did write on with ink. The Gemara has a Machlokas and Sota, where the Pasuk mentions also plastering them. Did they first plaster the stones and then write on them with ink, or did they do the other way around? Was it actually that they first wrote it and then they covered it with plaster? And the Gemara explains that the nations of the world were realized that there's something hidden under this plaster, and they peeled off the plaster and were able to read the words. But in any case, here the Gemara is saying that you want ksivatama, you want a perfect writing, something that should last a long time, and then a writing on stones is not going to do that.
Number one, and number two, why don't we say that really writing is accepted to be on either parchment or paper. It's not meant to be on stone.
Right, but the Gemara is saying that's the point. We need both. We need the Gzeira Shava. The fact is, without the Gzeira Shava, we would have said, since it says Al Mezuzah, then okay, you have to have a two-step process, but it just means that you have to attach it after the fact. Shittim Gubetzis points out, also the idea would be, in other words, if the stone is already in place on the doorpost, you wouldn't be able to do Ksiva Tama. It's not that easy to do good, strong, solid writing when the stone is already in place. So then you would have said it means that you do it, you engrave it off-site, and then you attach it. But once we have the Gzeira Shava from the Get according to Rashi, or from the Parsha Soto, or the Sefer Torah according to Tosfos, then it's clear that it's on a parchment scroll. Okay. So now we're done with the dinner. So we need both. We need the Gzeira Shava to tell us that it's a parchment scroll, and we need Uchsavdom to tell us that it has to be perfect writing, meaning, in other words, that it can't just be on a... Meaning, in other words, that you have to have. First you write it, then you attach it to the mezuzah. Then you attach it to the doorpost.
So that means that if we didn't have the Gzeira Shava, you couldn't infer that writing means writing on stone? I mean, that's a bit of...
That's what we would have thought, yeah. So now we begin with the topic. Now we begin with the topic of tefillin, which is going to take us almost to the end of the parak. The Gemara says that the Mishnah had said back on Daf Chof Ches, "Arba parshiyos shebat tefillin ma'akvus zuasu." The four parshiyos of tefillin are ma'akv one another, meaning if you don't have all four parshiyos, then the tefillin apostle. And that even one detail, even one writing is ma'akiv and makes them puzzle. So the Gemara says, pshita, just like we asked on Das Kof Tes, in connection with the mezuzah, the Gemara asked, isn't that obvious? Of course, if one letter is missing, for the same reason, it says uchsav tom, and that means that it has to be a perfect writing. So not just a perfect writing, like we just said, meaning that it has to be davka on parchment, but it means the whole, everything that's in the Torah, in those parashiyos, has to be written perfectly. And the answer is Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Lo Nitzuch Elo LaKoitzer Shoyud. It comes to tell us that even the Koitzer Shoyud has to be present. We talked about on Daf Chof Tes, Rashi and Tosfos argue, what is the Koitzer Shoyud? Rashi says it means the right leg of the Yud that curves downward, that can't be missing. Tosfos had objected over there that, of course, that can't be missing. Without that, you don't really have a letter. So rather, Tosfos had explained that it means the little thing that sticks out on the lower left corner of the Yud, a little tag that sticks out over there on the bottom, opposite the leg, that also can't be missing. So the Gemara says also Vahonami Pshita, but isn't that obvious as well? The fact is, it's part of the shape of the letter, so of course it has to be there. So the Gemara says, you're right. L'nitzucha l'idach to Rabbi Yehuda. Really, what we need is to teach us another din of Rabbi Yehuda's. Any letter in before we learned it about mezuzah, here the same thing is true as far as tefillin. It's also true of a sefer Torah, that any letter that's not completely surrounded by blank parchment on all four sides, meaning if one letter is stuck to another, or we talked about if one letter is written by the edge of the parchment, psula, then it would be possible. So I feel ksav echad ma'akvan means even a detail in one letter that you can't even have, that a letter can be attached to another letter. Each letter has to have its own space around it. So the first thing let's talk about as far as tefillin is how many parashiyos and how many compartments there are. Tanan, why don't we learn in a braisa? Three times the Torah calls tefillin toitofos. There's a lot of different explanations among Rishonim what the word Kaitophos means. Rashi on the Pasuk, and Rashi on the Pasuk explains that it brings, first of all, from Menachem, one of the early Bali Giptuk, Menachem and Saruk, who explained that it comes from a word meaning to speak. Meaning, in other words, that's something that a person sees, feel it on the head, it's going to cause him to speak, it's going to remind him about Yetzias Mitzrayim, so that he'll speak about it. Tosfos points out the one thing is that the word, the basic meaning of Tetophos is a head ornament. We find a Tetephos used as a name of a woman's head ornament in Masechta Shabbos. So therefore, that can mean another meaning of it. So in other words, two of them, an ornament for the head. Another explanation Tosfos says is because they're on the head above your eyes. So the word Tetophos can be related to a word in Aramaic that means to gaze, because they're above your eyes that you gaze with. For the same reason, Tosfos points out that tzitz, the plate, the golden plate that the Kohen Gadol wore on his forehead, is also the word tzitz, is also related to the word metzitz, which means to gaze, to peer. So that would be another meaning of Tetophos. There's a variety of other meanings that different Rishonim talk about, what the different potential meanings of the word Tetophos. Tosfos also, by the way, points out why in common parlance we call them tefillin. What does the word tefillin mean? That comes from the word vayifalal, which means to demonstrate. So they're a demonstration, they're an edus that Hashem's name is called on the person, and that causes, as I was going to quote soon, v'yoru kolam v'ro kolam ha'aretz, all the nations will see that the name of Hashem is on you, which refers to the tefillin shorosh. So therefore they're called tefillin, as in they demonstrate that Hashem is with us. So the Pasuk says three times it calls them Tetophos. L'Tetophos, L'Tetophos, L'Tetophos. So now, what it is like this. Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says like this. Two of the places where it says the word L'Tetophos is written Choser. So it's written without the Vav after the Fe. So therefore, we can read it as if it said L'Tetephes, which is singular. So one time it says L'Tetephes, which would be singular. Another time also L'Tetephes, which would be singular. And the third time it says it with a Vav after the Fe, L'Tetophos, so that there's no question, it has to be read, L'Tetophos, with two Tetophos. So therefore, 1 + 1 + 2 equals 4. Harei kan dala divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says there you get 4 then. Now, Tosfos points out that the fact is, in our Sifrei Torah, we don't have any of them have a Vav after the Fe. So then how is Rabbi Shmuel doubting it? So the truth is, there are places where it talks about that the Gemara seems to have sometimes had a different Masorah of the spellings of certain words in Chumash than we do nowadays. We mentioned it in Zvachim in connection with the word Kaunos, for example. It comes up here and there in Shas. Nevertheless, though, Tosfos gives a different explanation. That like this, we have the third time where it says Ula Tetophos. Now what we can do is we can take the Vav from the beginning of the word and put it in the middle, put it between the Fe and the Saf, and therefore we have where now it's clearly written Ula Tetophos, which is a plural. So Tosfos discusses then the point of whether that can work, whether in fact we're able to do. There is a concept in Torah called Gerdon Masif and Vedoshin. Sometimes we can take a letter out of one word in a pasuk and attach it to a different word and then Daushin the result. We learned about it in Zvachim, for example. It's talked about in places in Chassidus, the deeper meaning behind it, in particular that it means sometimes, for example, where it's our job in Avodah to subtract from the Yetzihara and add it elsewhere and then Vedoshin, and then we're able to Daushin and we're able to understand what Hashem wants us to do. But does that actually work to put it in the middle of the word? Tosfos discusses here and in some other places in Shas whether that can work. In any case, that's a bishmol. Rabbi Akiva oimer ain't tzarach. Rabbi Akiva says you don't need to douch in it that way. Instead, the word l'tetophos itself means four. Tat b'kaspi shtayim. In the Kaspi language, the word tat means two. Pas b'afriki shtayim. And in the Afriki language, the word pas means two. So 2 + 2 equals 4. An interesting point is, So first of all, actually, it's interesting. Rabbi Avi Kaplan has in his notes to the Living Torah, he says both of those may have English cognates as well. He says the word tat might be distantly related to the word true in English, and the word pass may be related to the word both. Because after all, the like this, we're pronouncing it pass, we're pronouncing a soft as a, but really a soft is supposed to be a sound, so it would be something like pass, really, which is somewhat similar to both, so maybe they actually have meaning in English as well. In any case, what Kaspi and Afriki are, Kaspi might be some language they speak near the Caspian Sea, Afriki may be a language in Africa, or maybe a language in Phrygia, which is an area in what nowadays Turkey, whatever the case. How is Rabbi Akiva darshaning using foreign languages? So there's an interesting idea. The Shalach Kodesh says that what it is these are words that were originally part of Lashon Kodesh, but then after the Tower of Babel, when all the languages were split up, then these words remained in some of those other languages and they were forgotten in Lashon Kodesh. People stopped using them in Lashon Kodesh because they had other words for two. But nevertheless, they are actual words from original Lashon Kodesh. And therefore it's valid to darshan according to them. It's not original to the Shalach Kodesh. Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuri, the Talmud of the Rashba, writes something similar in his Jerushas as well. That these are actually known words from Lashon Kodesh, and the Chacham were able to re-identify them as meaning two and two respectively.
I heard why he was able to use other languages because the Torah has all 70 languages.
The Torah, in a sense, has all the 70 languages in it, right? So that's another explanation, is that since the Lashon Kodesh includes with it all the other languages, therefore we can darshan. Yeah, it's not the only place, by the way. There are other places the Gemara darshans words in Chumash, as though in Chumash and in the rest of Tanakh, as though they were from Greek or from various other languages, because, all the languages are incorporated into Lashon Kodesh, and as Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuri and the Shalah are saying, that even you have some of these words that actually were literally part of Lashon Kodesh and then dropped out of that language and are used still in other languages, Tosfos points out, by the way, given that you have three times the word L'Tetophos, then wouldn't it come out, according to Rabbi Akiva, that maybe you should need 12 parashiyos in Tefillin? Tosfos says no, because it's one thing when we're darshaning, for example, like Rabbi Shmuel is doing, where the Tetefes means one, but it doesn't explicitly say the number one, and the Tetefos, where one time it says it with a Vav, however we put in the Vav over there, and therefore it means a plural fine. It doesn't actually say the words one and two over there. But here, when according to Rabbi Akiva, the word the Tetefos itself means four, then you can't darshan. That means that the number of times it's repeated is going to make more and more of them. No, four is four, and that's that. Okay. The Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan. Yoko Yichtevem al Arba Oiris, you would think that you should write the Parashiyos of Tefillin on four separate pieces of parchment, the Anichem ba Arba Batim ba Arba Oiris, and you could put them in four compartments in four different pieces of leather, meaning you would think that the actual Tefillin Shorosh should consist of four separate batim that are not attached together. Instead, they actually have to be made out of one. The bias has to be made. The four compartments of the Tefillin have to be made out of one piece of leather. So how do we know that not? How do we know Dafka has to be that way? Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk says, Zikoren bein enecha, that the tefillin has to be remembrance between your eyes. Zikoren is in the singular. Zikoren echad, amarti lecha. So I'm telling you only one remembrance for shnayim or shloisha zikorenes, that there shouldn't be two or three. Okay, so what do you do? On the one hand, you have four parashiyos and four batim, but on the other hand, the pasuk is telling you it all has to be one. So how do you do it? Kosvan you write the four parashiyos on four separate pieces of skin, four pieces of parchment. You place them in four batim, but the four batim all have to be made out of one piece of leather. Rashi describes the way you do it, basically, and the Rambam describes similarly in Hilchos Tefillin, is you take the piece of leather, you stretch it out over a frame that has four things sticking out from it, so that it comes out kind of like a glove. So this way you have fingers sort of kind of sticking out from it, which those eventually become the compartments for the four parashiyos, but they all come from one piece of leather. Nowadays they do that same basic idea first, but then afterwards they use hydraulic presses and other things like that to be able to get them exactly square. Back in the day, I don't know how they did it exactly, but that's the idea. As you do it like that, you start by stretching the leather while it's still soft over a frame that makes these four separate compartments. Continues the Braisa, the Imkosvan Ba'ur Echad, if you wrote the four parashiyos on one big piece of parchment, the Nichan Ba'ar Batim, and you place them into the four Batim, Yotze, then you would also be Yotze. Now, how do you do that? Now, the obvious way you have the long piece of parchment, you have a part, let's say, that has Kadesh in it first, goes in the first bias, then you would have, you continue it from there, and then it goes underneath, it goes from that bias into the next one, and then you have the Vahoyaki Viacha, and so forth. The problem with that is that then they're not standing up. They have to be standing up in their compartments. Mind you, Rabbeinu Tam holds that not. Rabbeinu Tam holds that should be laying down the same way as we learned previously that he holds a mezuzah should be laying down. But the halacha is not like that. The halacha is they have to be standing up. Therefore, Rashi describes that what you might conceivably do is you would have one long scroll of parchment on which you would write the four parashiyos, you would have a space between one and the next. And then what you'd do is you would then be able to roll up each. So you'd make, in other words, the same way as the bias itself is made kind of like a glove. Conceivably, you could do the same thing with the four parashiyos. Put them all on one piece of parchment, cut it, so cut between one parasha and the next to make like the fingers of the glove, and then you roll up each one and put it in its respective bias. So if you did that, then the Braisa says Yotza, then you are Yotza. They should be on four separate pieces of parchment, but you are Yotza that way as well. That way they're standing up in their respective compartments, but you also need you cut between one and the other, and this way they'll go in where they belong. However, there does have to be a space between the batim. In that case, then you need, if you had them written on separate pieces of parchment, then you don't need a much of a space between one bias and the next. But when they're all written on one parchment, then you would have to have a greater space between them so that it's more obvious that they were that, so that it's more obvious that they're separate compartments and separate parshiyos. Dibrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says. The Chum say you don't need that. You just need to have enough space that you'll just have a thread or something that goes between one bias and the next, between one parasha and the next. So there's different understandings of Mephoshim exactly what the point of the Machlokas is, but Tosfos, Rashi, the Beis Yosef explains Rashi that way, and Tosfos also similarly seems to understand, in connection with the next piece. So Rishovin, they both agree, Rebbe and the Chacham agree, she knows him chutay meshicha ben kol achas va'achas, that he places a thread or a cord between each one of the batim so that there'll be a noticeable separation between them. So in other words, Rebbe would be saying that even though he's saying you need a larger space, that's not enough. You also need to have a thread or a cord between one and the next in order to make the distinction between one compartment and the next. It's very obvious, but they both agree that you would need to do that. Tosfos says though that that's really only when it's written on one piece of parchment. When the parashiyos are written on four separate parchments, then you don't need that. Tosfos says yesh noyagin, some have the minhag to do it even if they're written on separate parchments. L'maisa, nowadays the accepted halacha is you don't need to do that. Since we write the parashiyos on separate pieces, then you don't need a chutay meshicha, and in practice you don't. You have the division between one compartment and the next is noticeable, as we're going to say next in the Gemara. You have a groove that runs down between one and the next, where like the fingers of a glove were originally separate, but you don't need more than that. You don't need a chutay meshicha between them. And the Braisa continues, being in charitza nikar, if the grooves are not noticeable from the outside, psulas, then the tefillin will be puzzle. Because you can't have, in other words, given that the compartments have to be made out of separate like fingers that are sticking out from the leather, you have to have, there's a visible groove between each one, and as we're going to learn, as the Gemara is going to point out later, it has to go all the way down to the bottom, it has to go all the way down to the titura. We'll learn that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, so the Gemara continues, Tanan Abban, Ketzet Kosvan. So how do you actually write the tefillin? Tefillin Shoyad, Kosval Orechad. With a Tefillin Shoyad, you write all four parashiyos on one long strip of parchment. V'im Kosva ba'arba Oris, but if he did write it on four pieces, v'inicha ba'ayis Echad, and he placed them all in one bias, Yotza, then he is Yotza b'dieved. However, v'tzorech v'dabek, however, he does have to attach the four parashiyos together. Fenema, because the pasuk says, "V'hoyo l'chol oisal yodcha." The pasuk says it should be for you a sign on your arm. Now, a sign in singular. That means kishem she'oisachas mechutz, just as it's visibly one sign on the outside, namely the tefillin shoyad has only one compartment, and you see that from the outside. Kach oisachas mebifnim, the same way it has to be one sign on the inside. Now Rashi explains, if you have them on separate pieces of parchment, other people who see your tefillin won't know the difference. They'll think it's all one ois. But you yourself, when you wear the tefillin, you will feel them moving around, and therefore you will feel the mamoshos. You'll feel that there are four separate things over there, and therefore it will be two oises, and therefore you have to have them attached together. So it has to be oisachas mufnim. Rabbi Yosi Omer, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yosi Omer, ain't a sarach, Rabbi Yosi says, it's not necessary. If you wrote them on four separate pieces, you don't have to stick them together. Omer Rabbi Yosi, however, Rabbi Yosi says, umurgili Rabbi Yehuda berevi, Rabbi Yehuda, the distinguished Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yehuda HaChacham, Rashi translates, agrees with me. Berevi sometimes means the son of Rebbe, but here it doesn't mean that. Rabbi Yehuda's father is not Rebbe. So berevi or berevi sometimes is used in the Gemara to mean the distinguished Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Yosi says, Rabbi Yehuda does agree to me, shein ein lo tefillin shoyad. Suppose a person does not have tefillin shoyad, but yeshle shtei tefillin shorosh, but he does happen to have two tefillin shoroshes, so what can he do? Shetoyla ur al achas mehen, he can take a piece of leather and stick it on the outside of them, so that it looks like one bias. And then he can place it on it, and they can use it as a tefillin shoyad. It's written on four different parchments, and inside, under that covering, it's in four separate compartments. Doesn't matter. The Bach actually says in that case, if he's going to do that, he would also have to re-sew the tefillin, because that piece of leather that he's using to cover it still has to be sewn together with the rest of the tefillin, and therefore he'd have to undo the stitches and do that. But fine. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, Moida? What do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Yosi on that? I know Plogtayu. That was the exact case that they're arguing about. So if Rabbi Yehuda agrees in that case, then it's fine. And when what's the case that he's disagreeing and saying you would have to stick them together? So Rava says, you're right. Midivarav Shor Rabbi Yosi Chozabar Rabbi Yehuda. Based on what Rabbi Yosi says, you see that Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. Rabbi Yehuda ended up agreeing you don't, in fact, have to stick the pieces of parchment together. B'diyevet, it's fine if they were written on four separate parchments. In practice, Tefillin Shoyad nowadays are universally written with the four parashiyos and in one long piece. Okay, so the Gemara asks, so you're telling me that you're able to take a Tefillin Shorosh and turn it into Tefillin Shoyad. Eini, is that so? Didn't Rav Hananiah send a message in the name of Rabbi Yechanan? Tefillah shoyad oisin oisa shorosh. You can take a tefillin shoyad and make it into a tefillin shorosh. By reshaping it, the shorosh ain't oisin oisa shoyad, but you can't do the other way around. Lafisha ain't meridin mekdusha chamorol kedusha kala, because you can't take from a higher level of kedusha to a lower level, and the shorosh is considered to be a higher kedusha. Because you have the letters Shin Dalad Yud in the tefillin, and two of them are in the Shorosh. The Shins on the side of the bias, as we'll learn about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and the Dalad and the Knot, the on tefillin, the tefillin Shoyad, only have the Yud. So, and also that's one reason, and the other reason, because as we'll learn tomorrow in the Gemara, V'ro Kolamei Oretz, Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, when it says that the Goyim will see that the name of Hashem is called on you, V'yorum Mimeka, refers to the tefillin Shorosh. So the tefillin Shorosh has a higher level of Kedusha than the Shoyad. So how are you able to take a shorosh and turn it into a shoyad, as Rabbi Yosi is quoting Rabbi Yehuda as saying that you could? The answer is like Kasha, Hobatikta Hobachadsa. It depends whether you're talking about old tefillin that have already been used. When they were already used as a shorosh, then you can't turn them into a shoyad because of that. But when they're new, you've made them as tefillin shorosh, but you've not actually started using them yet, then therefore they don't have that stronger kedusha, and therefore you're allowed to turn them into a shoyad. Okay, the Gemara adds, Olamando Oma Hazmonim Milsi. Now there is an opinion in a few places in Shas, in particular in Sanhedrin, that Hazmona, that deciding that you're going to use something for a certain purpose, Milsi is considered a certain thing. That it is considered, it has a certain significance. The Gemara talks about over there, the context in Sanhedrin, is it's talking about designating a certain place for a caver, for a mausoleum or whatever, but then the Gemara goes on to talk about different other kinds of things like that, where you designated a particular pouch that you're going to use for tefillin, where you designated a particular room that's going to be used for a bathroom, etc., and you have opinions over there in the Gemara that just designating it for that is considered something significant. Well, then in that case, he what?
Tomorrow
is a separate case, that's something else, but yeah.
That's when you designate.
Yeah, but that's something else. Here we're talking about when you designated something that's going to be used for a certain purpose of kedusha, or the opposite of it, then that already has significance in the sense that now you can't now use it for something else. So meaning in the case of the caver, for example, in the case of korbanos, right, also once you designate it as one kind of korban, then you can't redesignate it for another, but that's a different kind of thing. Here we're talking about, for example, let's say, so once you designated that a certain thing is going to be used for a caver, then you can't, it's also bahadah already. Once you designated a certain pouch is going to be used for tefillin, then you can't use it for anything else. And in our case over here, once you designated that this tefillin is going to be a shorosh and you designed it as such, then you can't reuse it for a shoyad. So according to that opinion, how would it be? You'd have to say, da'asni alayu me'ikra. we have to be talking about where to begin with. He made a p'tnai on it that if necessary, he'll repurpose this tefillin shel rosh as a shoyad, and therefore certainly in that case, hazmana is not significant. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ketzad Sidron, what is the order of the parashiyos in tefillin? Kaddish li v'hoyakiv yacha miyamin, the parashiyos Kaddish and v'hoyakiv yacha on the right, Shema v'hoyim shemaya mismoil, and Shema and v'hoyim shemaya are on the left. Here is where we have the famous machlokas of Rashi and Tosfos and the other Rishonim about what does this mean. Rashi learns that it means we're saying we're going from right to left. Kaddish, then Vahoyim Kiviyacha, then Shema, then Vahoyim Shemaya. On the other hand, here's where Rabbi Natan objects in Tosfos and says that no, then in that case, then the Gemara shouldn't divide them in two different groups. It should just say the order is Kaddish, Vahoyim Kiviyacha, Shema, Vahoyim Shemaya. Why say Kaddish, Vahoyim Kiviyacha on the right, Shema, Vahoyim Shemaya on the left? Therefore, Rabbi Natan learns that it means Kaddish v'Hayikav Yacha on the right, one next to the other. Then you start from the opposite end, from the left end, and you do then Shema, then V'Hoyim Shemaya. So it comes out that the two V'Hoyas are in the middle. It's called Havayas Ve'emtza. The two V'Hoyas are in the middle. Tosfos points out over here many different opinions on each side of it. There were Rabbi Rabbi Goin, for one, held like Rabbi Natan. So even though we always call it the Machlokas of Rashi and Rabbi Natan, in fact, the Machlokas goes back long, long before them. It's mentioned in the Zohar. Rishonim mentioned that at one point there's a place in Iraq which there's a tradition that's the cave of Yechezkel HaNavi. So they had a shul over there, and people would come to daven. One time, the Rishonim bring that the platform that by the cave fell down and broke because it was old and it collapsed. And they found underneath it, they found a gniza, and they found in there a pair of tefillin made according to Rabbi Natan's opinion. So therefore, so you see that it goes back, or not only do you see it goes back long before Rabbi Natan, but you see that that's a valid way of making tefillin. On the other hand, other Rishonim countered, you know what? Maybe those tefillin were possible, and that's why they put them in gniza. So it's an interesting point. And he says when you put something away, it's like Seamus, so you can't use it anymore for Kedusha. So some Rishonim argued that you see that it's valid, others say, fakir, you can see that maybe it was put away because it's possible. In general, this is an interesting question, Bechlal, about using like archaeological evidence and things like that to be able to decide questions in Torah. This is actually one of the sources, this is actually one of the places where that point comes up, whether that's valid or not, because we see, as in this case, things can often be interpreted in more than one way. Anyway, there's quite a lot of discussion. The halacha is the accepted halacha is like Rashi. Nevertheless, it's brought that there's still a strong reason to hold like Rabbi Natan, especially because we're saying so many Rishonim and Gaonim hold like him as well. There's a famous sefer from the time of the Balei HaTosfos. From Shilas Hatrubis Min Hashemayim. There was one of the Balei HaTosfos, sort of Yaakov of Marvej, would write questions and leave them under his pillow, and in the morning he would get an answer Min Hashemayim to his questions. So he collected these into a small sefer called Shilas Hatrubis Min Hashemayim. In one of the questions he asks, what's the deal? Rashi Rabbi Natan, who's the halacha like? And he was told Min Hashemayim, that in Shemayim they have the same machlokas. The whole base, the whole yeshiva shamayla holds like Rashi, and Hashem himself holds like Rabbi Natan. Because again, it's an honor for Hashem, Havayas Ve'emtza, that we should have the two names of Hashem, or one, the two words, Vahoya, which are the same letters as Yud Kei Vav Kei, should be in the middle there. So therefore, that's a very strong reason to wear Rabbi Natan's tefillin, and that is in fact why the minhag developed, especially among Hasidim, to tackle wear both Rashi's and Rabbi Natan's. You can have some Sfaradim wear them both together, which in principle you can do as well. So in Shulchan Aruch it says what you should do is if you're wearing them together, have in mind that only one of them, because you have to wear a mitzvah, you have an Isser of Baal Tosef, if you can add to the mitzvahs, so fine, have in mind whichever one the halacha is really supposed to be like will be the real tefillin, and the other one will just be like Ritzuas Ba'alma, like just straps without the mitzvah. Ashkenazim don't do that. Instead, they put them on one after the other. The minhag of Hasidim up until recently, including Lubavitcher Hasidim, was to put them on only after you got married. The Rebbe started pushing in the 1970s in Tokshim Lamed Vav that boys should put them on even from Bar Mitzvah and actually even from when they're practicing before Bar Mitzvah. There's an interesting tshuva from a Moshe Feinstein a few years after that. He writes to the Rebbe. He says, now that you said that we should put on Rabbi Natan's tefillin, I want to do that. But he says, in fact, I used to do that in Russia. I used to have a pair of Rabbi Natan's tefillin, but I lost them when we left Russia. And the problem is, Rav Moshe says, I follow Nusach Ashkenaz, also as far as the writing, as far as the style of writing. There are no Ashkenazim who write Nusach Ashkenaz, who write Beis Yosef Ksav, who make Rebbe Netzams for them, because only Hasidim will wear them. So what should I do? So the Rebbe commissioned, one of the senior Soferim in Crown Heights, Rebbe Eliezer Zalman of Olav HaShalom, to write Rav Moshe a pair of Rebbe Netzams filling in Nusach Ashkenaz, and then in Ashkenazi Ksav. But anyway, so there was a lot of discussion about that. The Aruch HaShulchan actually has a very interesting take on it. He says that really what it is the order in which we have it now with V'hoyim Shamayah last is appropriate for the time before Mashiach comes. And therefore the halacha is like Rashi. The order with having V'hoyim Shamayah first, and then the last thing is Shema, which has V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, you should love Hashem, rather than V'hoyim Shamayah, which threatens punishment. That's appropriate to be last in the times of Mashiach. So therefore, in token of that, we have the opinion of Rebbe Netam, and therefore we put them on even now in view of that. Okay. So the Braisa says, so those are the two different opinions. Then we'll talk about in a second, there were the two other opinions, Shimush Rabba and Raivad, we'll get to that in a second. So the Gemara says, V'atanya Ipcha, don't we learn a Braisa the other way around? Kaddish V'hoyi Kivyachah, supposed to be on the left, Shema V'hoyim Shemaya on the right. The answer is Omar Abaya, like Kasha, kan mi minisho kore, kan mi minisho maniach. It depends whether you're talking about from the right side relative to the person who would be reading them. Hypothetically, if you're wearing tefillin and somebody were to stand in front of you and cut open the compartments and take out the parashias, you want that from his right should be Kaddish. So that'll be on your left. The kan mi minisho maniach, as opposed to the other Braisa is talking about from the point of view of the person who's actually wearing the tefillin in himself. So from his point of view, Kaddish is supposed to be on the left, and then going from there. And if it were the other way around, it's possible. Va'kodeh kesidron, when a person is going to read from the parashias, he should be able to read them in order. In other words, exactly that. If he were to open up your tefillin while you're wearing them, he should be able to find first Kaddish, then v'hoyi kiviyacha, and so forth, going in that order from right to left. Now, here's where Rabbi Natan has to explain how that phrase means, because after all, according to him, the last two parashiyos are out of order. So Rabbi Tosfos explains, Rabbi Natan would explain that it means that the Braisa said Ketzad Sidron. What is the order? It means that the order should be the order that we said before, but it should be in that order going from right to left. But not necessarily, but it doesn't mean that a person reading them would actually read them in order. It means, in other words, you're going to read them in the order, not the order they are in the Torah, but the order in which they're listed earlier in the Braisa. There are in fact Yosois of the Gemara that don't even have these words at all. So in that case, then it certainly would be no question. An interesting point is also, so first of all, we have there are the opinions of Shimush Rabba and the Raivad. The Shimush Rabba was one of the Goyim, Reb Sar Sholem. The Raivad was an Uli Rishon. They learn respectively, like Rashi and Rabbi Natan, but as far as the order of the parashiyos, but they learn the conclusion of the Gemara exactly the other way around. That the Gemara is saying that from the point of view of the one who's wearing them, it should start from the right, and from the point of view of somebody who's reading them from the outside, if somebody were to cut open your tefillin while you're wearing them, then he would have them starting from the left side. So Moshe Rabbah has the order of parashiyos like Rashi, but in the exact reverse order, and the Raivad has like Rabbi Natan, like the order of Rabbi Natan, but also in exactly reverse order. So in the Shoyad, by the way, that doesn't make a difference. In the Shoyad, you only have one compartment, so therefore it doesn't make a difference. Everybody agrees they're written in the order of the Torah, and therefore those who wear it, so it's rare Hasidim, rare with the Rabbeim, and certain rare Hasidim would wear Shimush Rabba and Raiva. They're not meant for the average person. The Rabbeim explained that those are only meant for people on a very high Ruchniistic level. So therefore, so they don't need a separate Shoyad for those. What they do is they put on Rashi's tefillin, then they take off the Shorosh of Rashi's and put on Shimush Rabba. And then afterwards they take all that off and put on Rabbi Natan's, and then afterwards they take off the Shorosh of Rabbi Natan and put on the Shorosh of Raivad. So it comes out that a complete set of four pair of tefillin like that is actually not really four pair, it's six tefillin altogether, two Shoyads and four Shoroshes. There's a Hayom Yom in Av, Yud Tes Menachem Av, that goes into the details of the exact Seder of it, but again, it's not Rashi's is universally required. Al-Pi Halacha. Rabbi Natan, there are certain opinions that say that that's the correct way, and therefore, for example, B'dievet, a person says the bracha on Rabbi Natan's, then he will be Yotze, but Shimush Rabba and Raivet, definitely not, and those are only meant for people on a very high ruchniistic level. The Rebbe mentions, for example, that when he was a young married man, a few years after he had gotten married to Rebbe Tzimchai Moshka, the Friedrich Rebbe told him to start putting on Shimush Rabba and Raivet. The Rebbe says, I wasn't sure whether I'm really ready for that, but it's on the Achrayus, it's on the places of the Friedrich Rebbe. If he says I'm ready, then I'm ready. You know, we find also that the Rebbe wrote about it to the Blevi Yitzchak to inform him, and the Blevi Yitzchak also says, you know, I'm a little surprised about that. I mean, Halavai were Yotze with Rashi and Abin Tam Tfilin, the Kabbonists were supposed to have with those, but, you know, again, if you're ready for it, then okay, good, you're ready. There's certain Rabbi Itcher de Masmid, the famous Chassid, wore four pair of tefillin. There's certain rare Chassidim in throughout the generations that have worn them. But it's explained that those are only meant for people on a particularly high ruchnistic level. They're not meant for the average person. But as far as Rashi and Ibn Atam, again, Rashi is the basic halacha, and Ibn Atam is also something that's appropriate to everybody. But and again, as the Rebbe started talking about in Lamed Vav, for everybody, even from bar mitzvah age and on. An interesting point, by the way, in that connection, as far as Shimush Rabba and Raivet, again, there's no separate Shoyad. What about Rashi versus Rabbi Natan? Shittim Kovetzis discusses over here the possibility that maybe even Rabbi Natan wouldn't argue as far as the Shoyad. Maybe even when it comes to the Shoyad, you would actually, since they're all in one long parchment, maybe there'd be no machlokas. You just write them in the order of the Torah, and that would be that. On the other hand, he says that no, Rabbi Natan would argue on the Shoyad as well, because even though the Parashiyos do have to be written in the order of the Torah, but since, according to him, in Rabbi Natan's tefillin on a Shoyad, you actually do have on the parchment, you do have V'hoyim Shemaya as third and Shema fourth, it means that when you're writing tefillin Shoyad for Rabbi Natan, you write Kaddish, you write V'hoyim Kivyacha, you leave a space, then you write Shema at the end, in the last space, and then you go back and write V'hoyim Shemaya in the third space. And that's how we do nowadays for Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. So Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam's, if you open up a tefillin Shoyad of Rabbeinu Tam, you won't see any difference between Rashi's, but the sofer who wrote it will know that there's a difference because he wrote Shema first and then V'hoyim Shemaya, and if not, then it's going to be possible. So it has to be done that way. As again, opposed to Shemush Rabba and Raivet, where there is absolutely no difference between their Shoyad and the Shoyad of Rashi and Ibn Atam, respectively. Okay, so we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We'll talk about what if the Parashiyos was switched around, and we'll continue talking about many different dinim of how tefillin are made, and how they're worn, and so forth.